What is the most important e-discovery issue today?
Cost control?
Technology-assisted review?
Information management?
Preservation?
From the latest cases to the newest technologies.
Our goal is to expose legal professionals to the most important e-discovery trends
with the brightest e-discovery experts.
Rulemaking,
predictive coding,
litigation hold,
proportionality,
document review,
social media,
efficiency,
ethics,
cooperation. Welcome to the ESI Report, sponsored by Kroll On Track, an e-discovery software and service provider. You are listening to the Legal Talk Network.
Hi, I'm Michelle Lang, and welcome to another ESI Report. If you have been looking for benchmarks to compare, forecast, and evaluate your organization's e-discovery performance, then this podcast is for you. The eDiscovery.com Pulse Benchmarks are real-time metrics compiled from approximately 4,000 Kroll On Track cases from 2008 to 2012. On this month's podcast, we will highlight some of Kroll On Track's recent Pulse metrics and discuss what can be learned from these numbers. Joining me today for this discussion is Eli Nelson. Eli is of counsel in the Washington, D.C. office of McKenna, Long & Aldrich, where he is responsible for developing and implementing firm-wide practice standards for e-discovery and information governance. Eli counsels clients and attorneys on the efficient use of technology, data mining techniques, and project management practices for litigation and compliance issues. Eli, thanks for joining me on the ESI Report.
Thanks for having me, Michelle.
So let's go ahead and get this started. We won't talk a little bit about, you know, what the Pulse benchmarks are and the data that forms them. A lot of that information can be found for any of the listeners interested on ediscovery.com underneath the Pulse and then the benchmarks. But what I'm most interested in talking to you about, Eli, is your opinion on what these benchmarks mean. And so if we could get started, let's talk about the first benchmark, which is really a lot about big data. And despite the big data phenomenon and however you want to term big data and what it means to you, the eDiscovery Pulse benchmarks show that there has been a decline in the amount of source gigabytes in eDiscovery matters over the last 4 years. We've also seen a marked decrease in the number of custodians collected per matter. So I'm interested in what your initial impressions are of this data as we kick off our discussion.
Well, it's kind of interesting to note, like, we're comparing a couple of the metrics that we've developed. One is the number of average gigabytes that have collected that have been collected prior to filtering and processing, and then comparing that to the average number of custodians that are actually in a review database. So the numbers don't quite line up apples to apples, since what's in a review database might not reflect what was actually collected. What we are seeing, and we'll take this one at a time, the first metric, which is the number of average gigabytes collected prior to filtering and processing, what we are seeing there is that that number is holding fairly constant over time, which I have to preface this by saying that this is Kroll-specific data, so it doesn't necessarily reflect, I think, overall trends in the industry at large, but it's certainly helpful information to talk about. So what we're seeing, at least with respect to Kroll and probably folks who are similarly positioned, and that is large-scale e-discovery providers, that collected volumes are holding roughly constant over time, and that can mean a couple of different things. For one thing, we know that the long-term trend is that data volumes on a per-custodian basis are actually increasing, and that breaks down into two different silos. One is how much content is actually being created by an individual custodian, and two, how much content is basically being repackaged and repurposed by a custodian. We all know that you can only generate a certain number of emails and type at a certain rate of speed over time, so the amount of actual unique user-generated content that is being developed can't really increase by that much. But what we're finding is year-over-year growth on a per-custodian basis suggests that we must be looking to different sources of data, and it's probably the result of repackaging of data coming from a number of different environments. So basically, the convergence of trends that we're seeing is that user content that is unique that's being generated is holding roughly constant, but content that is being repurposed from other sources, such as structured databases and enterprise-level applications, is actually on the rise. That, I think, explains why we're seeing roughly a constant amount of total data that's being collected for a given matter.
What about the custodians then? What we're seeing is that the custodians collected per matter are decreasing. Any insight into that?
This is where the countervailing trend is coming in. What I think is happening over here is that on an individual custodian basis, we're definitely seeing increasing data content creation. But what is happening is that the legal industry as a whole is getting more sophisticated about ESI, and parties are zeroing in more on exactly what they want, and they're forcefully negotiating limitations on discovery to get at what they want, rather than allowing these really, really broad nets to be cast. And there's getting to be greater adoption of proportionality mandates that are coming from courts and also from basically the guidance from the rules of civil procedure. And people are taking the obligations of having an honest vetting during the Rule 26F conferences. They're getting more serious about negotiating limitations on discovery and getting it actually relevant information instead of just getting involved in fishing expeditions. So what I think that we're seeing is that collection efforts are being far more targeted as a result, and that is why we're seeing a decrease in number of custodians over time.
And the result of that decrease and that more targeted collection efforts could be the result of better technology and better early data assessment and protocols along those lines?
It can be, but I think that really the two primary drivers for reducing the number of custodians that get collected is a change in the law and how it's actually being applied by negotiating adverse parties, and second, by cost considerations. Because in an ideal world, you want to know as much as you can about your case, right? So all other things being equal, you want access to as much data as possible, and you'll kind of sift through it as you can. But that's not realistic, and the law is recognizing that that's not realistic by applying a proportionality overlay to the kinds of discussions and efforts that we actually undertake. So with that backdrop in mind, what we are seeing is the emergence of newer, better technologies that facilitate the analysis and kind of that early peek into data that informs more targeted collection efforts.
Let's go ahead and move on to another ediscovery.com pulse benchmark. The next metric that we're looking at shows that email remains the dominant form of data processed, accounting for over 65% of all ediscovery data processed in 2012 by Kroll OnTrack. Do you have any thoughts on this number and why this is such a large portion of the data processed?
It is an interesting number, and what we are seeing is that over time, the proportion of communication or the proportion of ESI that we're reviewing in the legal space for e-discovery purposes is actually increasing. And that actually makes a lot of sense to me, because a legal review of things like spreadsheets and databases is not really all that helpful or informative, and it's really kind of getting out of the wheelhouse of legal expertise and more into fact development and analysis that is probably accomplished, frankly, better using other methods, like working directly with structured databases or compiling records, working in tandem with custodians. So what this increase in email as a proportion of the review indicates to me is that the legal industry is focusing more on what it actually does well, which is trying to determine what did people know, who did they share that information with, and what did people actually do in response to particular events. And you really develop a better understanding of that bigger picture by analyzing the communications, and the communications are primarily in the form of email. So this longer-term trend makes a lot of sense to me. What I think is also interesting to note here, though, is that email communication is only one of a number of different ways that people can communicate within an organization. And so I suspect that we're going to see potentially new and disruptive rise in other formats, like maybe using bulletin board or wiki-style communications, or the use of SharePoint to kind of share thoughts in a discussion forum, maybe the rise of additional instant messages or perhaps text messages as forms of communication. And all of these things will give rise to new and novel problems in terms of developing policies regarding retention and use and how to navigate the interplay between personal and business communications. And it just really remains to be seen what's going to happen with those things. But email is going to continue to be, I think, in the short to medium term, the primary form of business communication. And it is because of the data volume, and what we're actually tracking is data volumes. Text messages, instant messages tend to be fairly low volume and have a low footprint in storage space. I think that email as a proportion will continue to be high and probably increase even a little bit.
Let's go ahead and move on a little bit. The next Pulse benchmark deals with review. And as we're moving right across the EDRM here, this Pulse benchmark shows that the average number of reviewers per project has decreased significantly over the past 3 years. Eli, any significant forces behind this trend with regards to the size of document review teams?
Well, there are a couple of things going on here. And I think that the metrics that we're looking at here are going from 32 average reviewers in per project in 2010 down to 24 in 2012 is probably a bit on the high side. As we're seeing eDiscovery analytics expand and prices decrease, there are more and smaller projects that are opening up to the legal marketplace. So I think that we're probably going to be seeing, on average, smaller size projects. And of course, if you have a smaller size project, then you don't need as large a review team to handle it. So that's one thing to kind of think about in the background. Another thing is, these kinds of reviewer team decisions are driven primarily by cost. There is a lot of cost concern in the legal industry over document review, and it's gotten a lot of press. And that's resulted in a much, much lower tolerance for high review costs and creating armies of attorney reviewers to attack a project. As a result, what we've been seeing is the emergence of more and better front-end analytics, use of predictive coding and other kind of automated classification, a more aggressive use of search terms, and a more aggressive strategy surrounding interpretations of responsiveness to try to get the review populations down.
So let's continue to move on, again, sort of right across the EDRM. The last metric that we're going to talk about is with regards to production. And the eDiscovery.com Pulse benchmark found that the number of gigabytes produced has dropped by about 70% since 2008. Legal teams are getting better at determining what's relevant. That's certainly one of the insights that you could read into this metric. But thoughts, Eli, on the changes made to make lower production a reality?
Again, I think the trends toward producing less are going to be driven primarily by concerns over cost and also changes in interpretations of the law and more adoption of things like cooperation and more negotiated limitations on discovery. This is something that makes a lot of sense because when you get to the very end of a case and you're actually presenting at trial, you only have a certain number of exhibits that you can reasonably anticipate presenting. So really, that's what you have to work with and that's what's important. And honestly, what we should be doing is we should be working backwards from that number instead of starting from the bottom and then trying to get to some completely unreasonable number. Like, we will never wind up with a case where there are 30,000 or 50,000 or 1 million exhibits. So why are we producing volumes of documents like that? It doesn't really help anybody develop a clearer picture of what they need to support their cases. So first of all, the system is broken, and we need to be continuing to apply pressure to reduce the amount that is getting produced in matters. But what we're seeing in terms of the longer-term trends are a reflection of that, or a reflection of the changes in law, a reflection of the cost sensitivities that we have. And one of the surprising statistics that I actually saw in the Kroll metrics is that even though the volume of data that's being produced seems to be decreasing over time, which makes sense, the proportion of reviewed material that gets produced also seems to be decreasing. And that doesn't make a lot of sense to me, because what that suggests is that what we're reviewing is a certain amount and what we're producing out of that review is a decreasing amount, which means that we're getting less effective at identifying what's actually responsive and what we actually have to produce. I don't really believe that that is taking place, so I think that that's either an outlier statistic in what we're seeing here, or what it suggests is that what we are putting into a review database is not just the stuff that we intend to produce, but we're actually hosting data for other purposes. Like, we need to be able to maintain a repository so that we can conduct analytics and get a bigger picture of what's going on for case preparation efforts that are completely independent of production. Or it may be that we're hosting more data in review databases for purposes other than production review, like internal investigations, or maybe information governance or compliance purposes.
So Eli, our time is coming to a close. Your insights have been very interesting. And I know that Kroll OnTrack is planning to continuously update their ediscovery.com Pulse benchmarks by adding new metrics throughout the course of the year and updating it with the 2013 data in due time here. And so I guess what I'm asking you next, or a final closing question, is do you have any ideas for metrics that perhaps you aren't seeing in the current ediscovery.com Pulse metrics, and anything that would be interesting in evaluating cases that you're not seeing?
Actually, there are a couple of things that I think would be very, very useful to the industry as a whole. What I like is that the metrics are trying to track from the time prior to filtering and processing, and they're trying to track from the point of collection. I don't know that the EDRM has really done us a lot of favors by segregating preservation and collection. I'm not sure that if you're concerned about cost and there is a cost associated with volume of collection, then I can certainly see segregating the two. But frankly, what I found in my personal practice is that preservation is very, very difficult to do without collection. And collection is a business disruptive process, so you want to minimize the number of times you have to dip into the well to collect data. So to me, sometimes it's more efficient, if cost isn't a consideration, it's more efficient to conflate preservation and collection. So all that to kind of suggest the basic premise that we need to have a standardized baseline to start measuring these metrics. And I would suggest that we start with the volume collected, which appears to be what we're doing with these metrics, and we should make that systematic. Like, we always want to start off with the volume that's collected, and then what we can do is develop better percentage statistics to see how effective filtration strategies or production percentages and whatnot. We'll get a better sense of what proportional reduction or what proportion of collected data is being produced, and a clearer apples-to-apples kind of picture will be developed. Now, some useful practical metrics that I think would be interesting to collect would be rates of privilege within a review database, to the extent a privilege review is conducted, because I tend to think that over a myriad of different cases, that percentage will probably be within a particular band, and it might be useful for the industry to know what that band is so that they could do kind of a sanity check on their own processes. Another metric that might be useful would be the rate at which important, not merely responsive or relevant or produced documents, but the rate at which we're developing important documents out of a review, and also perhaps a rate of QC overturn off of a first review process. Those kinds of aggregated statistics, I think, will suggest some industry benchmarks that practitioners would find very, very useful.
Well, with that, I think that's a perfect place to wrap up this edition of the ESI Report. Thank you so much, Eli, for a great conversation and your expertise.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
If you are interested in the ediscovery.com Pulse benchmarks, check them out for yourself. Head over to ediscovery.com/pulse. Well, that wraps up another edition of the ESI Report. Thanks to everyone listening, and thanks to Kroll OnTrack for sponsoring another show. Until next time, I'm Michelle Lang, signing off for the ESI Report.
This was another edition of the ESI Report, sponsored by Kroll OnTrack. Be sure to follow Kroll OnTrack on Facebook and Twitter, or learn more about Kroll OnTrack software and services at www.krolontrack.com. Thanks for listening to the ESI Report, produced by the broadcast professionals at Legal Talk Network. Join Michelle Lang for her next podcast on the latest e-discovery trends. Subscribe to the RSS feed on LegalTalkNetwork.com or in iTunes. The views expressed by the participants of this program are their own and do not represent the views of, nor are they endorsed by, Legal Talk Network, its officers, directors, employees, agents, representatives, shareholders, and subsidiaries. None of the content should be considered legal advice. As always, consult a lawyer.